Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at ArmorAll.com. Armor All. Less work, more clean. Terms apply.
On Criminal, we bring you true crime stories told by people who know them best.
We didn't believe in setting fires because that was too dangerous. We were, you know, a kind of gentler kind of crooks, so to speak.
So the best plan you had was that you'd lasso it.
Yeah, never imagined I'd use it for a camel.
I'm Phoebe Judge, and this is Criminal. Did you have to say what was in the box?
Phoebe, we told lies.
Listen to Criminal every week, wherever you get your podcasts.
A new social media campaign is targeting celebrities who haven't spoken out against what's happening in Gaza. But is it working?
The sort of block out movement is a lot more about the shifting attitudes towards celebrity than it is about really achieving anything, because yes, Kim Kardashian has lost followers, and there are some cases where celebrities are seeing a dent, but I think this movement misunderstands how traditional celebrities make most of their money.
I'm Taylor Lorenz, and we'll be talking about the celebrity blockout this week on Power User.
All right, what's going on, everybody? Welcome back to the Waveform Podcast. We're your hosts. I'm Marquez.
And I'm Andrew.
And this is video episode number 2, which is very exciting.
It is. I realized we just pointed to ourselves, and I was wondering why you were doing that, but just that's because it's on video.
Just so you know, I am Marquez. I'm pointing at myself.
just in case you couldn't tell the difference between
them. Yeah, actually, that's really funny, because that brings me right into, we're going to talk about a bunch of stuff today. We've got some electric car stuff we want to talk about, some stuff going on with YouTube, and some features and some feedback we might have, and then also the world of like AirPods for Android, what's happening there.
Again, another year.
It's great. But I want to go over some of my favorite comments on the first podcast video, because now it's on YouTube, it's on the Waveform channel, you guys are watching it here again. If you're listening, there's a lot of great comments, and obviously now that we have YouTube comments, it's that direct feedback, immediate feedback.
I do wish podcasts kind of had a way to do that.
Yeah. I mean, we've been using the Twitter kind of that way, but it's not as like immediate and like timestamps and all that stuff. It's super good. You might notice a little bit of a theme here. All right, first one. I don't know why, but after seeing this, I can't connect how Andrew sounds to the way he looks.
I thought I wrote that at the end. I didn't know we were jumping into this already.
It's great. I have another one. Okay. There's a couple like this. Not gonna lie, Andrew's face is not what I would have expected after listening to his voice for all these months. Ever heard of how someone's face doesn't match their voice? That's Andrew. This is my first time seeing his face. I had no clue what he looked like until now, and this isn't what I imagined. No shade, Andrew. Still cool as hell.
I appreciate the no shade disclaimer at the end there.
This is great. This is the beauty of going on videos. I never pictured a lot of the audio-only podcasts that I listen to, I realized.
I was reading a lot of these comments and realizing, like, I do the exact same thing. Reply all, I didn't, like, look up what they looked like for a long time. Every time I do a, like, kind of criminal podcast or something like that, I refuse to look at what anyone looked like until after the end, because I get so into it that I have the pictures in my head and I don't want to mess up that, like, my imagination.
It's like when you read the book after, or when you see the movie after you read the book, and you're like, that's not how I pictured that character, but yeah. All right.
So I'm sorry for anyone who my face has ruined your, I'm dying to know though, like, I want to know how people saw me in their head.
Right.
My favorite
comment, I have no explanation for this, but in my head, after only hearing Andrew's voice, I could swear he had long hair. So yeah, apparently that's how they'd picture you.
This is the longest long hair. My hair's been in a bit, but it's just because I'm lazy, because I don't feel like getting it cut. I don't have the patience for long hair, but I'm kind of just hoping that means you've got me as like a Fabio kind of vibe going on in your head. So stop watching the video. I appreciate that. No, imagine me like that.
It's fun. I think the point of the video podcast, I guess the whole point of this is like we're providing a little more context. Like I didn't realize this, but I'd watched a bunch of video podcasts before I'd gotten into the podcast world. Mm-hmm. And I realized that I wasn't really watching them. I was listening to them, but then glancing over every once in a while when something was worth showing or seeing. Mm-hmm. And that was why, that's how I consumed like the Joe Rogan podcast or the H3 podcast or whatever other. They just kind of exist ambiently. And then I'll glance over like, oh, that was kind of interesting.
It's almost like you see it and you can see how they're set up and it makes it feel personal. And then all of a sudden you realize you're not even looking at it anymore, but you're still almost imagining what's already happening on the screen. So,
yeah.
I mean, we did this as another platform to have the podcast on because people wanted it. But our main goal here, and I know a lot of questions and comments we got were people worried that the video podcast was going to overshadow the audio format. And we don't want that to happen at all.
Nice.
You should get the same experience either platform.
Right. Minus video. It's basically the same thing. Now, one thing I will add, the Clips channel will be much more visual. That, if you haven't already seen the Clips channel or subscribed to it, might as well go subscribe now. The Clips channel will have its own clips and parts of the podcast, but like sectioned out and edited more into like their own videos.
Yeah.
And of course, like you mentioned, this helps discoverability. People can find the podcast on YouTube. It's really hard to just discover podcasts unless they're trending on mm-hmm. Apple Podcasts. So that's what the channels are all about. Definitely get subscribed on YouTube if you haven't already. That'll end my shameless plug.
Well, yeah, but I also think the Clips channel, if you are an audio listener and at some point you think like, oh, I wish I saw that thing they were talking about because they're terrible at explaining things verbally, then you can just go find it on the Clips channel probably, and it'll be way easier to just see that one little section, maybe 8 to 10 minutes of it without having to like rewatch the whole video podcast or something like that.
Yeah. Cool. Also, the intro is incredible.
Michael just blew it.
It's
out
just
of the
amazing.
Park again. It's so crazy.
That if you have any reason to watch the videos, it's the intros are amazing. All right. So this past week, also on the MKBHD channel, you might have seen we made a video on Right to Repair. Mentioned that we're making a bigger piece on Waveform. That is not this week. We're aiming for that to be next week's Waveform podcast with even more interviews and even more opinions and perspectives than before. So we're not talking about that this week, but that's upcoming. Stay tuned for that. It's going to be good.
I'm excited for that.
Yeah. But what I wanted to jump right into is we finally have, and this is kind of all we have, but we have a name for Ford's electric F-150 pickup truck. So it's called the Ford F-150 Lightning. And yeah, that's kind of all we know. We don't really know much about the details, but I kind of have some thoughts about this. I'm curious what you think, but there's like two categories of names for electric cars. There is piggybacking on the established, already well-known name, mm-hmm. and then some variation of it, Mustang, Mach-E, Taycan Turbo. We know what Porsche's Turbo line is, so Taycan is Turbo, okay, right? Okay. Or we have like the totally new name because it's a cool new thing and we have mm-hmm. to. Audi e-tron, Tesla's models for that matter, or
we'll talk
Rivian,
about another one in a couple
Lucid
minutes,
Air.
Too.
Exactly. So that's... You know, F-150 seems to make sense because everyone knows Ford F-150. Ford F-150, deceivingly very popular in the U.S. I think it's most popular vehicle.
Vehicle, I think.
Which is insane. So I fully expect, I would be shocked if they didn't name it some variation of it. So Lightning, yeah.
Yeah, Lightning is like fine, I guess. I'm not for or against it. I think it 100% needed F-150. And while like this kind of doesn't sound like a lot of news, we've heard so many rumors about Ford and an F-150 line, and like that being, we've heard a million different pickups coming out, and even GM, is GM part of Rivian or investing in Rivian?
There's a bunch of big investors in Rivian, Amazon.
Okay, Amazon is. Either way, we were wondering when the F-150 comes out, because no matter how many Cybertruck and Rivians and whatever there are going to be, we all know the Ford 150 is going to be like, that means pickup trucks made it to EV because of how popular it is. And this is one that needed to keep its name. It needed to keep Ford F-150. I kind of wonder if they decided to go not with just EV after it because...
Nah, they don't want that.
Yeah,
they
like,
don't want that.
I don't know.
I think, so when they come out with this truck, because we don't know anything else about it, but I think this has to be better than the current F-150. Like, especially in the things that
matter. To convert,
matter,
for sure.
To convert and matter. Because as soon, you can picture this as, like, if the F-150 Lightning comes out and it has poor range and worse towing capacity than the normal F-150,
oh, yeah.
That will confirm to everyone who had any reason to hate on EVs or not convert that they should not upgrade to an EV, they shouldn't switch.
Yeah.
So I think you, if you're Ford, and I think they already know this, but they have to make something about that truck obviously better for pickup truck buyers. I think it's going to be towing capacity and traction and power, because that's what EVs are good
power,
at.
I think raw power, yeah.
Just horsepower, but the ability to tow way more and carry more things. But I look forward to seeing what they actually make out of that truck.
So something I haven't really thought about is, like, there might even be that little added benefit to being able to charge at home, because pickup trucks have such terrible gas mileage. Like, if you're just doing your average commute, not everyone in a pickup truck is towing something every single day.
Right.
So they still have to commute to work. Mm-hmm. I would love to just never have to stop at a gas station, because I'm sure they're stopping at, on a like half an hour commute, they're probably stopping for gas 3 times a week. Mm-hmm. Now you never have to stop for gas on your regular commute and instead just supercharge for maybe some longer things. That yeah. sounds great to me. Unless you're traveling all over the state because you do construction and you have to go to a million different sites.
Right.
Then I see that as a drawback. But like just being able to plug it in every night and never having to stop at a gas station.
It's a huge win for a daily driver. I never even thought about this, but like you use the truck for work and then you plug it in and you use your home electricity on your like personal bill. I feel like maybe there needs to be some sort of established like subsidy or like your work will pay for I'm this sure. amount of your electricity bill, because it is amazing to wake up every day on 100% battery. Mm-hmm. Like that's super useful. But yeah, that's probably an extra little layer of consideration for like I'm drive sure. a work truck. I need my work to pay for not the gas anymore, but $50 a month on my electricity bill. So when I wake up in the morning, I have 400 miles and I just drive. So
hopefully if you're at a good company, that'll be a pretty easy like yeah. decision to make between you. But I yeah. really do think like out of all the EVs that have been announced in the last 3 years, maybe, I kind of think this is one of the most important, if not most hyped, if that makes sense. Because not generally in the EV world, but I think this has the most potential to just like bring people into the EV world. And we haven't seen something like that in a long time. I know Roadster yeah. has incredible specs. I know Cybertruck is cool. Oh, I yeah, know yeah. Taycan is like a sports car enthusiast. But if we're talking about pickup trucks, there are so many people with pickup trucks because they just work and they have a very specific purpose.
Yeah.
And if you're taking that most popular one, if no matter if it's a pickup truck or whatever, if you're taking the most popular vehicle in a country and making it EV, you're bringing people into the world. And right. I'm super excited about that.
Two things on that. One, they've got to nail the price. I agree. This will be probably the most important EV yet. If they nail the price, and if it's not,
I like, think right off the bat, it will yeah. be insane. Yeah.
And two, this is something I just thought of also. Maybe its key advantage is durability, because this is something Tesla's talked about a lot with the semi truck, is like cost of operation per mile mm-hmm. drops dramatically when you don't have to service it nearly as much, like electric vehicles don't. So true. maybe that's the angle for the pickup truck. But you had another one on here you wanted to talk about.
Yeah, this is one, I mean, I've mentioned it before. I enjoy Subaru as a car company a lot. I drive an Impreza and I love it, even though it's completely falling apart. But that's my fault and it has 170,000 miles on it. So I can't complain too much. But we've mentioned on here multiple times that Subaru seems like the perfect car manufacturer to finally make an EV because of how environmentally focused they are. They announced it.
Yep.
The Solterra EV. So we were talking before about bringing in legacy cars and making it EV or a totally new name.
Solterra.
Totally new name. I believe, and I don't have the article in front of me, it is a mixture between the Latin words sol for sun
yep.
and terra for land.
Yes.
Cool.
So yeah.
Look at me. I know Latin.
Earth, there we wind, go. And
fire.
Yeah, no, Solterra, that makes a lot of sense. I don't think Subaru is going to do Impreza EV and expect that
I
to would.
I thought they would have done Outback EV because Outback feels like their most popular. It is an SUV, so the picture is like the typical like...
Yeah, like what do we have? Launch, we have the name and a picture this time?
Sort of. It's like the typical like launch picture, which is like, here's the headlights and the general outside of the car.
Oh, silhouette.
But like it's not total silhouette, but very dark, so you can't see. Yeah. And of course, it's driving in like the mountains by a beautiful lake.
Sure.
So it's going to be an SUV. I think it looks a little closer to a Forester, which if you're not familiar, Outback versus Forester aren't that much different. Forester's a little more SUV-like, has a taller hatchback, and is a little taller and shorter, while the Outback stemmed from a station wagon and now is built up a bit. So it's longer. I think drives more like a, to me, sitting in it, I feel like I'm sitting high up like an SUV, but long, like my legs are out.
Yeah,
like an old station wagon. But either way,
it looks like this is closer to a Forester, at least in size.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is, here's what's going to happen: is it's going to come out, and everyone's going to go, "How does it compare to Tesla Model Y?" Because it's just the one that is the same size that is the most popular that Tesla makes.
Yeah,
and I don't think that's the same customer. This is like it's another one of those things where Taycan had to get compared to Model S, but like that's a different customer.
Mm-hmm.
And so Subaru buyers who are looking for eco-friendly, plug-in, literally in the garage every day, but also go for a long road trip, they're going to care about charging network.
Bingo.
They're going to care about like price-friendly, and that's hopefully both going to be nailed by this. So
yeah, I'm kind of interested in it because Subaru's main like strong points are generally reliability, which hopefully they can continue to do that.
Yeah.
All-wheel drive, which I kind of think is where they're not going to be able to like set apart quite as well, because in cheaper cars, all of their cars have all-wheel drive, and that's usually more expensive. So that's where they really set themselves apart in combustion engine cars.
Yeah.
But here, almost every EV has four-wheel drive.
At this point. It didn't always, it wasn't always that way.
Not always, yeah.
It used to be like there was the Tesla Model S P85, and then they made the P85D, which was the dual motor, because they had a bunch of rear-wheel drive, just single motor between the back wheels. Now, I don't think Tesla makes any single motor cars. I think the Cybertruck might have a single motor version.
Okay.
But that might not even be true. I think all of their cars are all-wheel drive. And most EVs now are putting two motors in the car.
I'm going to be interested seeing more EVs come out with that to see if technology is any different in terms of like sending power and not power. Because generally the way all-wheel drive works in terms of traction is this wheel is slipping. I have the capability of making that wheel have less power and the opposite wheel have more power to make up for it and thus gain traction. And Subaru's been top of the line of that for years and years and years. So I wonder if they're going to lose a step here or lose a step up on the competition. I'm not totally sure.
I think I would theorize that this is no longer a unique Subaru advantage.
Exactly. That's what I worry about.
Because in EVs where traction is computer controlled, literally every EV with dual motor all-wheel drive has better traction than literally every combustion engine car.
Well, they're still using computers to differentiate.
They are, but the electric motor instant torque and instant delivery of differences in torque is always going to be more responsive than what a computer can do controlling a gas engine. So the all-wheel drive traction of a Model 3 is world class because it's a computer-controlled electric motor. And that's just going to be the way it is for all of them.
Quick question about that. Is instant torque beneficial in traction? Because generally, immediate power creates too much spin in less traction, therefore potentially
I think
causing
it's also,
more.
It's micro adjustments that make it so good. So yeah, you do think of electric torque being like, put the pedal to the floor, immediate maximum torque, and that's really cool. But I think the micro adjustments of like your right two wheels go through a puddle, like In the first like 80th of a rotation of the tire, the car knows it's in water and is already starting to adjust traction. So it's that super quick and computer controlled stuff. It's not a bad thing that they're all getting it. I'm happy they're all going to have amazing traction.
What I'm excited about is when there's enough cars out there that they start comparing and seeing which ones are then now using this technology to really bring it to the best traction control possible.
Yeah.
I mean, like we're going to see new things, which are going to be really exciting.
You're going to see tank turn from a Rivian truck. You're gonna see weird like torque vectoring parking tricks probably.
But I want to touch on one thing you mentioned, which I think is the most important here in terms of people who are fans of Subaru, is that a lot of people who buy them generally buy them for the outdoors, for going on long trips, because they have all-wheel drive, they're cheaper, and they have a lot of like space in them usually. And they have pretty good gas mileage for what they are as well.
Yeah.
So range is going to be huge here. If this comes out with that, like, what was that one Hyundai that came out that had like 200 miles of range?
Yeah.
I think it'll be fall flat and completely.
Yeah, it would seem done. Sort of a counterintuitive for
exactly.
a Subaru designed for adventures to have so short of a range that you're worried you can't pull it off.
Yep. That's my main worry about it here.
That's a combination of range and charging network. We'll see what the charging network infrastructure plugin. I don't think they've announced that yet. Is it going to be just like Electrify America? Is it going to be a bunch of different third-party networks?
Yeah.
Don't know yet. Tesla superchargers, it's still an option. But yeah, we don't know yet. So that,
I'll be interested because they're such a smaller company. They've got to be one of the smaller, already established car companies now jumping into the EV market. As far as I know, because generally, like, a lot of these companies are all, you know, branded under one, where Subaru, as I know, is independent.
Okay.
Which, yeah, I'm surprised they're jumping in. I'm really happy they are. I think range will be huge if they could come out and say they have, like, a range similar to Tesla. Like, this is where you compare Tesla to.
So what would you want to see if you were going to switch from your Impreza? What is it?
Yeah.
What would you want to see on paper, at least for range, if we gave you, let's say, Electrify America?
Honestly, the only thing I would care about is just like top range on it, top battery range on it.
Because 400 miles?
400 miles would be fantastic.
380, 320.
320 is where I'd start getting worried.
290.
Yeah, I probably wouldn't think about
it. Okay, yeah.
So here's the thing. Wow, we've talked about this for a long time, but I do want to say I was very hyped for this, but there are a lot of people on Twitter that were also hyped for it. I think they have a pretty loyal audience.
Are they the OnePlus?
Ben Shun was talking to me on Twitter for a while, and we were talking about what we were excited about. I was like, all right, cool. There's other people like in the tech business that are really pumped about this.
Yeah.
But yeah, 400 miles would be incredible. The thing though is, like, if you want to say it needs range for adventuring, assume those adventures are outside of even Tesla's charging network,
right?
Like, because if I'm going, I'm living on like the west side of New Jersey, where between me and the studio right now, there's one Tesla supercharger. Whereas if you go south or north, there's like four or five superchargers.
Yeah.
So if I continue to go west into Pennsylvania, which is, if I'm not on a busy highway, I'm probably not going to hit a supercharger around there.
Yeah.
So like, charging network is important, but I think top range is most important.
Okay. Because I think it'll nail everything else. It'll have space, traction.
Yeah, I think the design will be solid. They're always pretty good at designing like what you need. And for ruggedness, they're the exact opposite of that EQS that we saw.
Exactly.
They have the bare minimum stuff inside.
Fair. Cool. All right, well, we'll take a quick ad break. We'll come back and we'll talk about YouTube because I've got some thoughts on some of their new features.
Mm-hmm.
We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Scott Galloway.
And I'm Ed Elson.
And we're the hosts, the co-hosts. It's kind of unfair to call us co-hosts. I'm really the host. He's he's my Robin Givens. Let's just be clear on what this is. But anyways, we're the hosts of Prop G Markets, your go-to podcast for all things money. Every Monday, we provide brash, unfiltered analysis on market-moving news, high-flying stocks, growing sectors, stupid boardroom decisions, and master of the universe CEOs.
And on Thursdays, we speak with some of the world's greatest finance professors, Wall Street insiders, and industry experts to keep you informed without getting bored. So if you want to understand money and how you can get more of it, you have to talk about money, and we're here to help you do that. Follow Prof G Markets on YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts to automatically receive new episodes every Monday and every Thursday.
That's right. The good news is we know how to get you economic security. The bad news is the answer is slowly. We'll tell you how on Prop G Markets.
Support for Waveform comes from Coda. So it can be tough to stay organized when your team is spread across time zones. With Coda, you can help keep your whole team on the same page with an all-in-one collaborative workspace that brings together the best of documents, spreadsheets, and apps into one platform. That means less time ping-ponging between different tabs and tools and more time on your projects. So with Coda's extensive planning capabilities, you can stay aligned when managing planning cycles and while measuring objectives and key results. Plus, you can access hundreds of templates and get inspired by others in Coda's gallery. So over 50,000 teams across the world collaborate with Coda, from the New York Times to Square, from Toast to TED and Uber. So if you want a platform that enables and empowers your team to collaborate effectively and focus on shared goals, you can get started with Coda today for free. You can head over to coda.io/wave. So that's Coda, coda.io/wave to get started for free. Coda.io/wave. All right. I want to talk about some YouTube features.
Okay.
I talk about YouTube a pretty good amount, just like kind of around the studio.
Probably it's been a while on the podcast since we've talked about it as a platform.
There's a good amount of stuff. So here's what I'll give you two choices. So the new mobile quality selector or YouTube Shorts, which one should we do first?
I'm going to let you choose this one.
All right, I can probably get this rant out of the way real quick. That's quality.
I basically was saying rant on, man.
Okay. So YouTube's new mobile video quality selector, it's been around for a couple weeks now. You've probably seen it. Mm-hmm. You used to just go up to the little three dots in the corner and hit the quality thing and then just pick your resolution, right? Simple.
Yeah.
People know big number means more resolution. People know that big number means more data. I think we're all on the same page there. I think YouTube tried to simplify it, and in their efforts of simplifying choosing quality, they actually ended up making it annoyingly more complicated, where you're picking a text option. Let me just pull it up. I tweeted a screenshot of this, so I can just read it to you real quick. You are now choosing not between like 1080 or 720. You're choosing between auto recommended, adjust to give you the best experience for your conditions, or higher picture quality, adjust to use more data, or data saver, lower picture quality, or advanced, select a specific resolution. That's the new selector.
Woof.
And it tells you what the quality is for your current video, and if it's automatic, it might cycle up to 720, maybe 1080 if your internet connection's good enough. If you want to just switch to 4K because you know it's a 4K video, you have to go to the three dots, you have to go to video quality, you have to go to advanced, then you have to go to scroll down and then hit 4K.
I'm not looking forward to that at all.
It's just worse. It's just worse.
It's more confusing, for sure.
It's more clicks. It's a little more confusing. And I feel like YouTube was thinking we want to simplify this and just make people go higher quality, lower quality. They're switching to lower quality because they want to save data, or they're switching to higher quality because they want better quality. So that's what we'll put in text. Mm-hmm. But people already know that. And I don't think any new users or brand new people to the internet are confused about, does the big number help my video quality or data? Like, obviously, the big number is more data.
Can I clarify something here?
Sure.
So this is what happens now when you're inside of a video and you click the quality thing.
Yeah.
Right? I could see this working better if it were, like, in your YouTube settings.
It used to be.
That's where it was. And that's how you defaulted things. You're like, I want this default to be, I'm on my phone. Like, maybe if it's on mobile data, I want it to take less data. If I'm on Wi-Fi, I want higher quality. Stuff like that would make sense.
Oh, I remember a really long time ago, I made a tutorial video on, there was a channel toggle, a login user-centric channel toggle where you could default to the highest available resolution on every video you watch. And that was a toggle you could check and you just accept that use more data. But on the desktop, like, I want that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm pretty sure that's still somewhere on the internet of, like, me showing people how to do that.
Hello everyone, YouTubers and everyone who's subscribed already. Welcome to another HD tutorial, and in this video I'll be showing you how to get your YouTube videos to always play in the highest quality without you having to choose it to do so.
I'm the type of person to do that. I don't know if everyone's going to do that, but I feel like generally people know if they're watching a video and it's blurry, they're going to turn it up to the higher number.
Yeah.
So just one less click, higher number. Easy.
No more mashed potatoes.
This is also the thing. This is the thing, though, is when YouTube gets to this point where they roll out this feature and it's everywhere, they've thought a lot about it and they really want to do it. So my real feedback, if YouTube's actually listening, is they're probably not going to want to get rid of this. I would say give us an option if we would like to just go straight to the resolution selector. That would just be easier for a lot of people. I think a lot of people would do that. And maybe some kid will make a tutorial on how to do it, and then one day he'll have a great tech channel where he makes all kinds of videos and reminisces about it.
And then poops on YouTube on his podcast.
Yeah. All right, wait, hold on real quick. Adam off camera, who's on the board, just brought up a great point. We're going to get him a mic so he can just, like, chime in straight away. But there's a possibility YouTube just wants to discourage people from switching to 4K right away, like immediately going to the highest quality and not really thinking about it. So they've added a little bit of friction. They've added a little bit of an extra hurdle to jump over so that most people just leave it in auto and don't think too hard. Because even if you go to higher quality, it doesn't necessarily go to the highest resolution.
Oh, wait, really?
It's still dependent on your connection. It just goes to one of the higher resolutions. So I was doing this before. I switched to higher resolution, and it brought me to 1080 on a 4K video. I tested it on our own video.
Oh, wow.
So I selected give me the higher quality. It went 1080. I'm on a 1440p phone.
I mean,
phone.
It's higher quality
it's
than
higher,
what it was.
But like, yeah. I am already toggling this phone to be a 1440p screen because I want to see those videos in 1440, and YouTube is making me jump again. So is it a bandwidth saving thing? Adam might be right. I just wish they would just give me the option.
I think there definitely is some aspect of bandwidth saving there. That makes the fact that it's more friction, I don't know if it necessarily... My argument would be less that it's more friction and harder to change, and more that it's like hinting, like hint, hint, nudge, nudge, like the way they explain it in text rather than numbers makes it feel like you're getting what is best for you. They're like, they're telling you what's best for you, which therefore comes back to including less bandwidth and benefits them.
Definitely.
Does that make sense?
It does. Yeah.
And then when you put both of those together now, they're just selling a lot of 480, 720 video.
I'm dying on this hill, YouTube. I hate it. Please change it. All right. That rant is over. We want to talk about YouTube Shorts.
So we saw a headline earlier this week about YouTube creating this $100 million creator fund because they're going to start paying some of the top short creators. Not even creators. It was some of the top short videos, I believe. They're going to reach out and pay them.
Yeah, I read I'll just read the excerpt real quick. Yeah. Each month, they'll reach out to thousands of creators whose shorts receive the most engagement and views to reward them for their contributions. So if you have a couple shorts go viral, expect an email going, would you like to get paid?
Yeah.
Out of the fund?
The thing is, we don't know how much they're going to pay them. This $100 million creator fund sounds great in a headline, but if they're reaching out to thousands of people a month, I don't know what kind of money it is. We'll it's still out. Nice money, and it's still them trying to attract people to shorts. But I just like, I feel like shorts in general are just kind of a really great way of explaining how like YouTube launches these new features. They fall flat and then they're trying to find ways to get people to do them. And I think that all because of that, it boils down to like, why are these not working? And why are people love YouTube? Like people made their whole lives on YouTube. I literally have a job because you have, but like why are these main creators not doing these other things?
I think I can speak to that. Yeah. So first of all, the creator funds that we keep seeing, it's like my favorite new trend of like, man, all
there's
right.
a TikTok one this week for TikTok stuff.
Exactly, same
like
thing.
Yeah.
And it's because the platforms realize they not just want, but need creators on their platforms making stuff to make them work. That realization, great. Now, YouTube Shorts, so the hesitation by a lot of YouTubers to dive into shorts is really interesting. I think a lot of the longer term creators like me have a bit of an aversion to YouTube releasing new, untested, unproven features because they could possibly have adverse algorithmic effects.
Yep.
They could possibly get killed in 6 months. And you will have just poured a bunch of resources and pivoted your channel down a path that ends up being a dead-end road.
Yep.
So the other end of that is if the feature works, I think there are a lot of younger creators or more nimble creators who will just jump right in and do a bunch of shorts or do a bunch of, what was the last thing, YouTube stories. I think that's might have been dead already.
I don't see anyone post stories anymore.
But they'll
even once premieres.
The thing is they launch a feature like that and they have a whole plan behind it, backing it as if it's going to be the future of the platform. So when creators see that, they'll go, oh, okay, I see that stories is going to be a really big deal for YouTube for the foreseeable future. Let me pivot hard and make sure that's a big part of my content strategy. And then when it's dead in a year, you feel like you wasted a lot of time, resources, you might have hired for it. Like that's a big loss. Like that's a big risk to take. But if it does explode, and let's say Shorts is the this huge future category on YouTube, a lot of younger creators who got in early and focused really hard on that are going to be really happy about it. So Shorts is clearly a response to TikTok. It's literally almost the same thing. Like you go in to hit Shorts on the YouTube app and it's this endless scrolling carousel of vertical videos. Yeah. It's kind of what you'd expect. The algorithm tries to learn you. But YouTube knows that it needs YouTube Shorts creators instead of just people uploading to TikTok and then copying that file and also putting it on Shorts, which is most of what's happening.
What they're doing. That's what they did on Reels. Like, that's all Reels is.
It's literally like watermarked TikTok.
Yeah, like literally all of Reels has the TikTok like watermark and the name on it. And people are probably just using Reels to find more people to go follow on TikTok.
And they literally show up in my Explore page. Like the ones that Instagram is suggesting to me on my Explore page have TikTok and like TikTok logos on them.
That's really funny. And anyway, if anyone was going to do though a TikTok competitor, it would be Instagram. It just makes the more sense. The demographic that is on TikTok is very, very active on Instagram. And it's just that social media platform, that short form social media platform that it makes way more sense on.
Yeah.
And it's TikTok still blowing Reels out of the water.
Yeah, yeah. So YouTube, I mean, this is a smart move from YouTube, no doubt. Like they are the video home on the internet. Mm-hmm. And if you run YouTube and you see TikTok, another version of videos blowing up, of course you need to make a competitor for it to offer people an alternative, and possibly they'll come to YouTube later. The question is, how do you get those creators to come to YouTube? Okay, well, we have a creator fund. We're going to start making it easy to monetize. TikTok is also still not easy to monetize, and they're also doing a creator fund thing, which is smart. But I think generally at the end of the day, the creators looking to make a job out of it are thinking about ease of monetization first. Discoverability right behind that. And YouTube is trying to lock both those things up. And they obviously have discoverability, but the TikTok algorithm is something special. It just surfaces things you want to see. It's really good. So they have that to compete against.
I do think, though, there's the aspect that we touched on really at the beginning of that. You touched on it really quickly. It's just like you're talking about bringing new creators in. YouTube definitely also already houses some of the biggest creators in the world. And they definitely want those creators to use their new features. Because if those creators use their new features, that's still bringing more people in. And I think that's where you talk about the unknowingness of the algorithm really starts making those big creators weary of jumping into some of these new features. We still don't use Premiere. They've been around for a long time because from what we found...
Have I explained this?
I don't
know if we have.
We may have. It just might as well do a refresher.
Yeah. So Premiere is what happens with a Premiere is if you think of like a movie or like say a TV show where it premieres on TV, everyone watches it at once. YouTube sees that on TV and goes, you know what? We're going to be the video home of the internet. We'll offer something like that. So you can make a whole YouTube video, upload it, and then set it to Premiere so everyone watches it at the same time live. They can't fast forward. They're all watching it with you. And there's a live chat, and it's really cool, and they obviously thought a lot about it.
And in theory, it's amazing.
It's in theory a great idea. What I noticed, because I've sort of stepped back and watched a bunch of premieres happen and saw what was going on with them, the impressions seemed to plummet because of the first few minutes of the video going live. Because when you think about it, when a video shows up in your sub box, a bunch of people all click on it at once, and they all watch it, and then they leave. When a video is premiering, a bunch of people all click on the premiere, and for those first 15 minutes, however long the video is, they all watch the premiere. Then when it's over, they leave. Then it shows up in the sub box, and I have no idea how they counted those live views. Typically, seems pretty low to me. So I haven't. We did a premiere with the blind smartphone camera test, and I kind of observed the same thing. Where like the first hour, it was 10 out of 10, like half the views of a normal video, and then it eventually caught up. But what? I see that, and I'm like, I'm not going to keep doing this.
Let me clarify there. You say 10 out of 10. If you don't know what we're talking about, that sounds amazing. We're saying the best hour or whatever, or the best impressions for the last 10 videos, it was ranked 10 out of 10. So the worst. It literally had the worst rating out of our last 10 videos.
Yeah, with like half the views of number 9. Yeah. So it was pretty bad. So yeah, I see that kind of thing. And I'm like, well, once they figure that out, I'll do premieres again. But it's not really ready for me to keep diving in and pushing videos through that. Same thing happens with like stories they kind of did for a while, and now it's I'm pretty sure it's dead.
Yeah, I think it's still there, but no one uses it. But like if we're talking about how something we like kind of understand with the algorithm but don't totally, this podcast right now is a great example because people might wonder why we made a podcast video channel and a podcast clips channel. And if you look at a lot of other podcasts, they do the same. Joe Rogan, H3, Lou Later, they all have separate ones. And the reason, the theory behind it is that if you have long form content and you have shorter clips, the overall watch time on the channel is going to be all over the place. Because if you have 30 minutes of watch time on the long one and 6 minutes of watch time on the short one, it gets confused and has a hard time like serving those videos.
Yeah.
So that's why we separate them. And because of that unknowingness, people are creating these different workarounds on YouTube. And I think bringing that all back to now shorts, imagine being a channel like us that creates generally 10 to 15 minute videos, now putting a bunch of, not just to mention that they're vertical, which we would never, ever, ever put on the channel, but putting a bunch of 60 second clips on where the watch time is 60 seconds, how is that going to affect our 15 minute videos?
Right. Yeah. The answer probably is just separate shorts channel. I mean, we've seen that.
Yeah.
It's now you have a dedicated audience that is there for shorts and they will watch inconsistent watch time short videos. And if you do that on your separate shorts channel, great.
I would consider that a fail for YouTube's marketing in the sense that they're hoping big creators bring this to their main audience, where the minute you switch it to another audience, you're going to lose a giant portion of your already subscribers. Because if they miss the announcement to like check out the shorts channel, they're never going to see it. So now, like, as YouTube, they've lost already, if that's what's happening.
And so it seems like their fail-safe to that is to try to dump as many people into shorts as possible. Oh, I mean, yeah.
How, obviously, though? But that's a thing. We were talking about shorts yesterday with Tim.
Yeah.
I tried to look at shorts on my desktop, and I literally couldn't find it.
Oh, you won't find that on the desktop. But you will find it on your phone, which is where they're competing with TikTok. I mean, yes, you can watch TikTok on your desktop.
It should be on desktop.
It's there and you can find it, but it's the same way TikTok on desktop, that's a tongue twister, exists, but you don't really care about it. If they're competing with TikTok, which is really what Shorts is and really what Reels is, you can watch it on the desktop, but it's all about that endless scroll on the smartphone, and they've built that in, and then they put the button right at the bottom of the app where it used to be the Explore page, or I think it's next to it now.
Oh, okay.
So now their goal is to just dump as many people organically into Shorts as possible. Same way, you know, Instagram did, where they replaced the add post button, put it up at the corner, and put shop there. Same behavior. Let's just dump people in and put it in the place where they're familiar and they're going to see it over and over and they're eventually going to click it. So Instagram, a little weird moving around button placement like that, but that's basically what YouTube did. Get in there, get in Shorts, find stuff you're into, and then you'll be a Shorts viewer from here on out.
I'm sure YouTube could figure out a way to put that on desktop. They're one of the social media apps that probably gets the closest to equal mobile and desktop usage. Like, depends. Instagram obviously is so far mobile. TikTok is even further mobile. I would argue Facebook now is mostly mobile, despite it originating on desktop. But like, if we're talking about YouTube, I think they have probably more mobile users, but I bet that's much closer.
I would push back just a little because I think it is oddly very specific to what type of content it is. And I think because literally Shorts is required to be vertical.
Like, which is terrible.
Yeah. So like, but that's because they want it to fit as the same TikTok thing. Like, you can do a horizontal TikTok, but it just looks ridiculous in the app. They want it to be the TikTok experience. And so they've built everything around it being just like TikTok, but on YouTube, and then they're trying to bring creators in with the creator fund and with like
I think that's all these rules. Where I was trying to go with like the fact that there is a higher average people that use YouTube on desktop because like it was originally built on desktop. It became mobile, and even when you're using mobile, you're almost turning to landscape. Whereas TikTok works well because it's only supposed to be on a phone. Reels worked okay because Instagram is still a vertical scrolling mobile app.
Mm-hmm.
YouTube is not quite that. It was developed into that. It's becoming good at it, but it still always has its heart and soul in the desktop version of it.
Yeah.
And that's why this feature just feels a little off.
I think if they wanted to feel less off, they would have made it a separate app, like a YouTube Shorts app. So
remember
that you open
IGTV,
it and you go vertical, just like IGTV.
That worked, yeah.
It worked bad because nobody's opening that app. So they have to build it into
YouTube.
Yeah,
I just don't know how.
Yeah. It's going to have to feel a little off because it's different from the rest of YouTube. But that's why TikTok took off.
They should have just made a Clubhouse competitor. It makes so much more sense.
I guarantee that's happening. I guarantee it.
Do you think, though, because their whole shtick is video and Clubhouse's whole shtick is not video?
YouTube did a Clubhouse competitor. It would probably have like the little waveform video playing while you talked or something. It would look like one of those. You know how Twitter did audio tweets?
Yeah.
Where you can talk and it'll just make like an animation for you talking. They'll probably do that.
I think there's a Clubhouse competitor where you upload your Bitmoji and that talks as it.
Is that real?
I believe so. I forget what it's called. I could figure it out. I think it's called Stereo, actually.
that's weirdly in the middle of, like, when I'm on Clubhouse, I don't even have my phone, like, facing my face. Like, it's just next to me.
It's called stereo.
Stereo? So you have to have it facing your face, but it's just replacing your face with the
I'll find something.
That's dumb. I hate it.
I think it's actually kind of an interesting idea. Just adds, like, one more step of personalization where you still get to have that, like, I'm talking to a group of people, but I don't have to, like, get ready or develop a set or anything like that. And it adds one more step of personal experience. I don't think it's a bad idea. I just don't think it's going to compete with Clubhouse. That's not the one feature that's going to make everyone move.
My core question is, does it require you to have your phone facing your face so that it uses the, like, animation face tracking stuff?
Wait, before I answer that, well, I don't know the answer to that question, if I'm being honest, but do you want it to have that or not? Okay. I would assume, just because I believe it's available on Android, that it does not do that, that it's probably just, I hear a waveform, I make the mouth move.
Okay.
That's my guess.
Interesting.
I don't know. I've never used it. I've only heard about it.
Yeah.
Just a thought.
I wouldn't be shocked if YouTube did a Clubhouse competitor, but we've talked about this for a while. I think we're going to take a quick break, and we got to come back and talk about this AirPods for Android situation.
Part what? 2, 3, 4?
Part 75.
All right.
We'll be right back.
This week on The Pitch, we're back to pitches. And this one's coming from my job.
What Podcast AI does is it lets podcast producers become 10 times more productive.
How much are you charging The Pitch?
We're charging $99, and Josh came in right before we doubled our prices.
What's keeping something like a Restream from just going like, yep, we do all this AI now stuff too?
So there's a lot of these older companies that are tacking on AI, and that's kind of the issue. They're tacking it on.
You built this really quickly. What's to stop anybody else from doing this? What's the moat?
How do you build a moat when you're building with AI? That's this week on The Pitch. Go right now and subscribe to The Pitch wherever you listen to podcasts.
It's loud, deafening, cacophonous.
It's a nightmare.
Oppressive.
And just what is it that many people think is pretty nightmarish and yet are still willing to shell out quite a bit of money for a night out at a restaurant?
Sound is the number one complaint that diners have about their experience. So why are restaurants so loud, and when did that start happening?
Is there anything anyone can do to fix it? We've got the answers on the latest episode of Gastropod.
All that, plus the science behind the perfect playlist to accompany your meal. This special episode is part of our new collaboration with the podcast Switched on Pop.
Find Gastropod and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, it's Tom Warren, senior editor at The Verge here. Microsoft is in an era-defining moment. It's betting on AI as the future of work, its Xbox business is going through transformational changes, and the Mac versus PC war is about to be back on. So, I'm launching a newsletter called Notepad. It'll be your inside guide to all those changes and beyond. From details on the next Xbox, to that one time every Microsoft employee named Michael appeared on a mysterious email list. Whatever is happening at Microsoft, you'll be able to read about it first in Notepad every Thursday. Go subscribe now at theverge.com/notepad.
All right, that's probably enough talking about YouTube. Let's talk about nothing.
Easy. I'm great at that.
Let's talk about absolutely nothing. They're coming out with some earbuds. See what I did there?
Where's the cricket noise on the soundboard?
Oh, that might have been the worst joke I've ever told. Anyway, for those unfamiliar, Carl Pei's new company, he left OnePlus. He started this new company, this tech company called Nothing. And every time they make a headline, it's some sort of pun about how Nothing has announced something or somebody's announced Nothing. The company name is Nothing, and I guess what do we know now? They're launching wireless earbuds.
Yeah, you can only announce Nothing for so long before you have to announce something, which at that point feels like it's already destroyed the complete reason of having the company, but
yeah,
I digress.
It's kind of funny that it's the same like extra beat I have to give when explaining a brand name. When someone asks what my phone was, and I have to be like, this is the OnePlus 9, and they go, the what? And I go, the company name is OnePlus, and then it's the 9. So it's the OnePlus 9. Like, oh, okay, I get it. So now you're going to have to go, so what is this? The Nothing 1? So I'll have to go, oh, these are the Nothing One. The what? Oh, so the company name is Nothing, and then these are the One. So this is the Nothing One.
That's a great realization. And now I just assume Carl Pei is going to continue to create companies, quit, and then name more confusing companies.
This is that the About thing? Seven. The what? Oh, so the company name is About, and then these are the Seven. So this is the About Seven. Oh, got it.
You better
it,
copyright that right it. Now.
I'll take 10%. We don't really know anything else about these, right? Is that a product image?
There is a product they have like a teaser. I feel like I saw what I thought was an image somewhere, but I can't tell if they just created more out of the teaser. So what we do know is they're partnering with Teenage Engineering, which someone I knew nothing about until Adam explained it to us. And they make some really, really good looking design stuff.
Yeah.
So I have these, the image we have of these are kind of like the bottom part of the earpiece, the earbud that is like clear.
They're just teasing every angle.
It looks really nice, but at the same time, like what I'm most interested about is Carl is somebody who's really good at hyping up products. He was obviously amazing at OnePlus. They built their whole ecosystem kind of based on like flagship killer low price.
Right.
So when I originally see Carl Pei starting a new company, I kind of think it's going to go in that low price route. The problem is Teenage Engineering is not that by any means. They are very expensive because they make super high quality stuff. So is this going to be super hype, high-priced, beautifully designed earbuds, or this is going to be the OnePlus of earbuds that is cheaper with really great specs and competing against AirPods or Galaxy Buds Plus?
I would imagine, I mean, that the vibe I got was closer to OnePlus just because of like the teasing that I've got where it's like, look at all that we're going to deliver for you. But yeah, that is a really good point. Like the collaboration, because you see stuff like they collab with Hasselblad and now the phone's more expensive. But does a collaboration with Teenage Engineering mean that this product will be more expensive? I guess.
Maybe. I don't even know if it just has to do with that they're collabing with Teenage Engineering, but if they're helping design it, they use very high quality products. And I think just literally based on what the build quality is going to be, sounds like it will be more expensive. So I'm going to go on the other side of the coin of that. And I'm going to guess these are expensive. Mm. Do we want to try and guess a price based on
let's guess nothing? Let's guess the price. So we
didn't even need to do that again. Let's go.
Wow. So we know silhouette, we know company name, we know the name. They're wireless earbuds. I say these are $149.
That's your cheap following in the footsteps of OnePlus?
Well, not quite. No, they're not going to be like these cheap buds that you just Bluetooth connect to anything. I think they're going to go like, look how beautiful these are. They're transparent. They sound amazing. And they're only $149, but they sound like $499. I think that's going to be the angle. But
are there $499 earbuds out there?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
There are $699, there are $1,000 earbuds, yeah, there's in-ear monitors.
I think I was going to say there's in-ear monitors and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah. There's a, Audis
are the, there's yes, like, I had those, they sent us those ones that like, they weren't truly wireless, they just had wires, but remember they were like, it felt like they like crawled into your brain.
Yeah.
They sounded really good though.
They did.
They were ridiculous.
They did.
But, and they were like open back also. Yep. They're really cool, but they hurt
and they're
really
like
bad after
$900
like an hour
or something.
Okay. To me, if I were saying these are like trying to compare to things, I would say it's comparing to Buds Plus or Pixel Buds or Sony or AirPods even. So I would think $149 would be like right even. So cheaper to me would be $129.
Okay.
$149, I think, is a good guess. I'm just saying I don't think it follows the OnePlus playbook.
So those competitors you named, Pixel Buds, $159.
Those are actually, I think those are $129.
AirPods
which is a bad example.
Pro, $250.
Yeah, and AirPods regular, $159.
$159.
Right?
So they're in the range.
Like are they $199?
No, I think they're $299.
Are they really?
Sony XM.
Okay, maybe $149 is kind of OnePlus-y. The problem is just like there's so many earbuds. It's really easy to get lost.
Sony's WF-1000 XM3s, the wireless noise-canceling earbuds with a little bit of ANC, 178 at Best Buy.
What's worse, having to explain to somebody that OnePlus is the name of a phone, or that nothing's, or just having to say a Sony headphone name out loud?
It's, if I'm trying to direct somebody directly to buying it, I hate the Sony name. It's like, okay, look for the Sony ones, and then they've got this long name, but they're black, and it says XM3 at the end, and they're like wireless noise canceling. Did you find them yet? Is that enough explanation?
I could see like telling your dad to like look this up on Amazon, and he's just like, there's just a bunch of RAM on my screen, or like some random like motherboard, because he just got all the numbers and letters wrong.
I think I downloaded something. What's going on? I think I'm going to stick with 159 is my guess.
I'm going to go 199. I think they're going to be a little on the hyper side and more build quality. I wouldn't even be surprised at 250.
Okay. There's also Pixel Bud rumors, which are also very light.
Very light.
We have a name and a color. Is that it?
Pretty much all we know is like it's about the right time for them to announce. And there was this like Google Nest email that went out that accidentally showed, I believe, a green colorway of one of them. And we also, I think, saw a white colorway of one. I know there were ones that were white already, but they were white and black. I believe there's a rumor, a leak of a full white one.
So the price is in the rumor. They're the A series, or the Pixel Buds A series.
Is the price in the rumor, or are they just guessing it based off of previous prices?
They're guessing it based on previous prices. Yeah. But, you know, we could probably guess again. So, like, Pixel Buds 2 that are out right now, $279.
Wait, what?
Sorry, that's Australian. $179.
I was going to say they're not that
expensive. Bad, Australia.
Do not buy them for $279.
Yeah, $179 for the Pixel Buds that are out right now. So does an A series cut that in half? Like when we see the Pixel 4A, that's a pretty cheap
phone.
Yeah,
right. If it's A, does that mean it's going to be cheaper? It's weird that they would name it different and not just 3, or did they just... Right. I mean, they don't have the best track record. Pixel Buds 1 were... hilariously bad. They're those ones that were supposed to like translate different languages for you, which it was just the most typical like Google random like feature they throw out. Like, remember the chain link fence like eliminator for photos? It's like, hey, we're gonna do this, and then just like, let's never talk about that again.
Yeah, it kind of got swept under the rug.
Pixel Buds 2, I've heard people have had quite a few issues with. I think Adam is one of them. He said they disconnect pretty regularly.
Yeah, I liked mine. I only used them for like a week, which obviously I won't have nearly as much experience with glitches, but I had like one phone connected and it was fine. But they're $179 and they're pretty premium. I'm going to guess Pixel Buds A, if they come out, are going to be $59.99.
I'm stuck between $99 and $129.
Even though Pixel Buds are $129? $179? Current
Pixel Buds.
Still
cheaper.
It is cheaper.
There's less of a margin when you're like cutting price at that price already. True. I'll go 99. Okay. 89.
We'll have to have somebody like write these down and fact check us and see if we get these right in the future when they come out.
Wrong.
Last one is another rumor, a new Sony earbuds rumor. Yeah. So we just mentioned
that's a little more meat to it, I feel.
Yeah. Like. So we mentioned the WF-1000 XM3s. I really like them, but they are like big, annoying earbuds. Like, you have to sit down and listen to them, because otherwise they'll fall out your ear because they're so heavy.
Which is like, what's the point? If I'm sitting down and listening, I'd rather just have over ear. They're more comfortable. They probably sound better. They have bigger drivers. But like,
some people just like in-ear monitoring type, but they're wireless too, so it's different.
They look like a Bluetooth like phone accessory,
like the headsets back in the day when somebody would talk like this on their Bluetooth and they have a mic. You can do that stuff.
You look like you're like some Wall Street like trader or something like that.
The rumor is these Mark IVs will be a different shape, actually. If you're in the video podcast, or at least the clips, you can see this new different shape rumored, which is a little more of like a
circular,
a little closer to a Galaxy Bud
type, it looks way more like Galaxy Buds, I would say. From just the leak, I mean, and this isn't confirmed, this is just a leak, but I'd say it almost looks like half the size.
Right. I'm curious if they will have both the same sound quality and either the same or better ANC. Mm-hmm. Just as far as like strength of noise cancellation, I didn't find most of the earbuds that I've used to have very strong noise cancellation. I'd say, honestly, AirPods Pro have the strongest noise cancellation, ANC, active noise cancellation, of any that I've used. It's got a seal, it's got the mic, it's really using that computational power. I wonder if that's going to be a big focus of these, or if it's just, hey, we made the same great sound but smaller, which is also fine, but I feel like
it's fine.
If you're going to get more buyers, you want to do a little more than just that.
I'm sure they'll probably say it's like 10%, but they'll throw some percentage out there that's not actually noticeable, and that like maybe some people will be like, oh yeah, this one does, it does sound 10% better, and then just placebo. But the fact that it's smaller to me, which is like, I kind of want to go on a little rant here at the end of these rumors, because like,
go for it.
That is an example of the reason I dislike the majority of truly wireless earbuds that aren't AirPods.
They're too big.
They're too big, and they're big in a strange way. Essentially, if your earbud is in your ear, I want the least amount of it hanging out horizontally, if that makes sense. Because when the only thing that is keeping it in your ear is the small silicone tip, the further out it goes, the further the center of gravity pushes out your ear. And with every step you make, whether you're walking or running, you can just feel it slowly weighted on the outside, pushing down and thus pulling it out of your ear further and further. And when you have a product that is that small and not connected to anything, the last thing you want to happen is to fall out of your ear.
Yeah.
So you can make the best silicone tips in the world. If it is too heavy on the outside, it is going to fall out. A perfect example of that, Surface Buds are ridiculous and have like a ton coming out the side of your ear. There's some old Bose ones I despised because they sat so far out of your ears. And the XM3s as well are like that.
I would say the pushback for the XM3s would be, you know how you see the ads of like what you expect people to do with the product? I think they expect people listening to XM3s to kind of just be sitting down and not really doing anything, which is a different type of earbud experience than walking around the city, exercising. It's a different earbud. It's still an earbud, and it's still focused on quality and being wireless and connecting to your phone, but it's a little different. That would be the XM3 pushback. I agree with the others, though, like, especially, I guess, if you're trying to do, you know, Pixel Buds and Galaxy Buds, they're getting closer into your ear.
I think Galaxy Buds Plus are some of the best. They do come out a little bit, but because the main thickness is at the back part that's touching on the inside of your ear, the center of gravity is closer to your ear canal. Therefore, it doesn't feel like it's going to pop out. There's no wiggle as you're moving. I use the Jaybird Vistas, and the reason I've been using them for so long is because, and we test a lot in here, we get Jabra, Anchor, like everything you could ever think of makes it into the studio. And the first thing I do is try them on and like walk 10 steps back and forth, and I can instantly tell if I think they're going to fall out. The Jaybird Vistas that I have are amazing. They just like, they have a little wingtip, but not anything that's gigantic, and it's just enough to almost fit flush with my ear. Maybe that's a me thing. I think they fit perfectly.
Yeah, my theory is there's a different like target demographic. I'm thinking of like Surface Buds were huge, but you're just sitting in an office.
I'll give that credit. That's supposed to be I'll give it credit for having a stupid capability of being able to swipe through your PowerPoint. It needs to be bigger to do that. Sure.
Yeah.
Why you would ever want to do that again, I don't know. But there are still plenty of ones where I'm sure you've tried it too. You put them in, and the minute you start walking, you can feel it slowly just like pulling out because they're bouncing.
I immediately try it with the ones that I know I'm supposed to walk around in. Like the Vistas are an outdoorsy type, like go for a hike in them. Like the Galaxy Buds, walk around every day. AirPods Pro, walk around every day. Pixel Buds, wear them all the time. All of them have done a pretty good job with the center of gravity. So I fully agree with that. Like you got to get that in closer to the ear.
And AirPods doing the silicone tip was huge because the original ones didn't fit in everyone's ears. But the thing is their weight in that little, you know, if you want to imagine it like the top of a toothbrush, in the handle part of the toothbrush, that's where all the weight is. And that very well fits
the stem.
In that
the stem.
I'll call it a toothbrush.
Okay.
It fits like perfectly in that groove in the side of your ear, and therefore puts all the weight there and isn't pulling it out of your ear. The minute it starts pulling it out. Okay. That's a long rant. I just it's the main thing that when I test those buds, make me very upset.
I'll leave you with one more thing.
Okay.
One of the best features of really nice headphones is a large spatial sound. Mm-hmm. And the closer the driver is to your ear, the harder it is to achieve that sound. So in really nice over-ear headphones, the driver is set back from your ear, and you get a better, I think it's called soundstage. And so in really nice listening earbuds, their challenge of getting that driver away from your ear directly translates to the center of gravity, making it feel like it's going to fall out of your ear. I'm sure people listening to this who make products are like, there's other reasons why we do the things we do and we change the designs. But just another thing to think about.
I just feel like that shouldn't be the number one part. I mean, like, good sound quality is always great, but good sound quality sucks when it's an earbud laying in a sewer gutter because you were walking down the street and it fell out of your...
Different strokes. Different strokes.
The other stroke's wrong.
Well, anyway, I think that's where we'll end it. We've talked our faces off for a bunch of different reasons and topics and ranted, but... Again, if you're watching the video version, let us know like what you want to see done better, what types of stuff you liked and didn't like. We've changed the main angle a little bit, got this eye level a little more consistent.
We dropped the banner behind us. If you're on the audio, just come check it out really quick to see like, now you can imagine, unless you don't want to see what my face looks like and want to keep it as
the
your
mystery.
Yeah, the mystery. I'll accept that too, as long as I look really cool in your mind.
Fabio. Yeah. other than that, thanks for listening. We'll be back next week. Catch you later.
Waveform is produced by Adam Molina. We are partnered with Studio 71, and our intro outro music was created by Cameron Barlow.